Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the UCC argument when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000, you're paying $7,650 a year in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed, paying the 15.3% rate. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying that 17% of $50,000 twice? But June and I both know that the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax, then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax. That means that you pay the 17% on the $7,650 twice. Now, that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from everyone who pays this tax. $1,300 is stolen from you every year. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company stole from you by charging you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? Now, isn't that just real special? If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, tax and status is available. That's our school on compact disc for home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the Uniform Commercial Code, this UCC law merchant argument straw man that is so popular today among patriots all around the United States, I imagine, maybe around the world. I can't tell how far this thing goes. I know it's up in Canada. And I showed you what happened historically. I showed you the history of this UCC, where it came from. Last time we were talking about this thing of usury, and I showed you geometric progression. I got a letter from a fella, and I'll read you the letter. It's just a short email over here for this week's discussion. He said, could you do a story on credit card collections, and the disclosure statements and rules as to third-party debt collection under administrative law and or maritime claims, and then talk about the remedies? There's a lot of talk about straw men and debt elimination due to the lack of backing of U.S. Federal Reserve notes. Could you touch on that subject as well? The answer is yep to all of the above. Last time we talked a little about usury. Let's take a look here at some more on this thing of debt. The very purpose for this straw man concept is debt elimination. Well, you wouldn't need the straw man program if you didn't have debt. And people that have debt need a solution. They're in trouble and they need a solution to that debt. They're on the verge of losing their homes, losing their cars, losing their social standing and position, losing their credit, and they can't make ends meet and they can't pay their bills. And yeah, that's exactly the end result of usury. It's geometric progression. And I pointed out to you that the only people that pay taxes are the poor. Poor. Those are the people who actually buy the goods and services. Every one of us that goes into the marketplace and buys goods and services pay tax. I'm a taxpayer. I don't pay income tax, but I'm a taxpayer. And then I pay income tax because the government sets that income tax on Office Depot. So I go into Office Depot and I want to buy a box of paper, and the price of the paper contains all of the taxes that Office Depot pays. Whatever the tax rate that's set on Office Depot, and I'm telling you as an old-timey businessman, I never cared what the tax rate was. In fact, I kind of enjoyed the tax rate and the tax rate hikes. I'll give you a quick illustration. I was running a business that was generating about $1 million a year worth of sales. And the corporate income tax, I think, was 5% in Idaho at that time, and they raised the tax by 5%. That doesn't mean that they raised it from 5% to 10%. I said they raised it 5%. It was 5% of 5%. You understand that? It was a trivial amount. So they adjusted the state income tax on corporations by 5%. Which it wasn't much to start with, it was 5%. And I raised my prices by 5%. And then when people said, well, why are you raising your prices 5%? I said, didn't you read in the paper? The state legislature raised the income tax on corporations by 5%. So I raised my prices by 5%. Now, most of you people out there are scratching your head saying, well, that makes all the sense in the world to me. Now, about one person in 100 out there is saying to himself, why, that Gordon, that thieving SOB, he raised his prices 5%. Now, if you got a pen and paper out there, let me show you how this works. The profitability of this corporation that I was operating was about 10%, which is about normal for a corporation. And so we're selling $1 million a year worth of product. So write down $1 million. And then 10% of that is $100,000. Now take 5% of $100,000, which is $5,000. Can you follow that? So I'm paying $5,000 in tax on $100,000 worth of profit off of $1 million worth of sales. The legislature comes along one day and they say, well, we're going to raise your tax by 5%. And so now the tax rate, you know, it's 5.01177625.21% or whatever the hell it is, but 5% of 5% is hardly worth calculating, you know what I mean? But because of the big banner headlines in the Idaho Statesman, I raised my prices 5%. Well, when you raise your prices 5% on $1 million in sales, it raises your sales to $1,050,000 a year. Well, now take 10% of $1,050,000 a year, and you get $105,000. Now remember, I'm only paying $5,000 a year in tax to start with, so now I've got $105,000. And now I'm going to pay the 5% tax on $105,000, right? So let's take 105,000 times 0.05. So I'm going to pay $5,250. So my actual tax increase is $250, but how much did I raise my prices? $50,000. So I make $47,250, right? No, $47,000. No, wait a minute. Take $250 off that $50,000. It's $49,000. Now $49,750. Got that? So that's the way business works. And you know, you don't have to be a Jew to figure that out, although my company controller was a Jew. And by the way, it was Milton that suggested that we raise the prices 5%. So I learned it from a Jew. General Motors does that. You're paying $20,000 for a car that back in 1950 cost you around $1,000. Price of automobiles are up 20 times. The price of inflation is not up 20 times, it's only up 10 times since 1950. General Motors is now making twice as much money selling cars in 2006 as they made in 1950. Have their taxes gone up? You bet. Yeah, their taxes have gone up. The insurance industry was bellyaching back in the 1960s that they had to pay such an exorbitant amount of claims. They just, you know, people complain, farmers complain, insurance executives complain, bankers complain, everybody complains. As long as you're complaining, you're telling everybody, I'm not making any money. And as long as everybody believes that you're poor and you're not making any money, it makes everybody feel a lot better. When you found out that Exxon was making $36 billion a year profit, it made you real mad. The fact that $36 billion is only 7% of their sales, I was running a corporation making 10%. Nobody's mad at Microsoft or Bill Gates. He makes 24%. Nobody's mad at Walmart. They make 24%. Everybody's mad at Exxon because Exxon makes 7%. What the hell's the matter with you people out there? I said it's time to get our heads screwed on straight. Exxon isn't making exorbitant profits at $36 billion. If they were making 50% profit, well, I don't think that might be another story. It's a public corporation. Maybe you might want to change things. I don't know. I'm just telling you that the numbers don't justify it. Now let's take a look at debt statistics over here. The average American household has 13 payment cards, including credit cards, debt cards, store cards. There are 1.3 billion payment cards in circulation in the United States. You got about 100 million people in this country that are adults, head of families. 115 million people work in the workforce. You've got about 115 million people here, head of families, and they have 1.3 billion credit cards. I'm happy to report I don't have any. Zero. So you people have, and you can have my share also. Americans made $1.1 trillion worth of credit card purchases in 1999. George Gordon made $0 worth of credit card purchases in 1999. I made $0 worth of credit purchases in 2006. Americans carry, on average, $5,800 in credit card debt from month to month. If one were to make only the minimum payment on that debt every month, it would take 30 years to pay it off and include an additional $15,000 in interest. So you get $6,000 worth of debt and it costs you $15,000 to service it, nearly three times as much. Let me tell you, boys and girls, if you want to increase your standard of living, if you want to double your standard of living, if you want to give yourself a pay increase, cut up all your credit cards and pay cash. You'll live twice as well as you do today. Or you can go out and you can buy things on credit. Use your credit card. Pay the bank 17 to 27% interest and live half as well. And it's a choice that you have to make in life. You can live twice as well or half as well. You know? You can live twice as well and pay cash, and you can live half as well and use credit cards. Now, 115 million Americans can't be wrong. They believe that living half as well and paying interest is a better program. Why should I get in the way of their happiness and success? Then they write me a letter like this fella does here, and he says, hey, listen, could you do a story on credit card collections and the disclosure statements and rules and third-party debt collection and so on? Now, this isn't the only letter, Steve. I mean, I get letters every day from people that are in deep trouble, and they want me. See, they're dissatisfied with George Bush as their guardian. They're dissatisfied with the banks and credit card companies and so on acting as their guardian. So they want George Gordon to become their new guardian. Now, I'm sorry, boys and girls, but I'm not in the guardian business. Now, I run a school, and I will teach you how to get out of debt. I will teach you how to double your standard of living. I will teach you how to make a lot of money. When you want to pay your fee, you go to school, we teach you information, we give you knowledge. What you do with the knowledge after you leave school is between you and God. I don't care what you do. And then the foundation of our educational program is the Ten Commandments, and the foundation of our business school is Thou Shalt Not Steal, which is the basis of all personal property rights. I'm not religious, I don't go to church, and I don't collect tithes from people. I'm just telling you that the basis of personal property rights is Thou Shalt Not Steal. Without Thou Shalt Not Steal, you can't have private property. And indeed, Americans don't have private property. The bank owns all of your property, boys and girls. It's on your credit card balance. You went out with your credit card and you bought a big screen TV and you've got all these nice thingies in your house and you've got a mortgage on your house. You don't own any of it. In law, you're known as an equitable interest holder in due course. Can you write that down, boys and girls? Equitable interest holder in due course. That's what you are, all of you debtors. A debtor is a slave to the lender. I use the word slave. The correct scriptural term is called bond servant. You see, in strict legal parlance, a slave is somebody who's taken into slavery by force and violence. That's somebody who was captured in Africa against his will, kidnapped, and thrown on a slave ship and brought to America. That's a slave. A bondservant is somebody who does it voluntarily. A bondservant is somebody that walks in and signs a mortgage contract with a bank. And he indebts himself for 30 years, voluntarily. He walks in and makes a choice. So in reality, you people in debt now are not slaves. And we use that term oftentimes, credit debt serf, credit debt slave. Actually, you're bondservants. And you should have a hole bored in your ear, and you should be identified. Just like all these young kids today, they run around with these rings in their ears. And you can come and inspect my ears. There are no holes in these Gordon ears. I am not a bondservant. And anybody with a hole in their ear who's a male ought to be ashamed of himself. Because that's what that means. Now, women have holes in their ears, and they should have a hole in their ear when they get married. Women who are single and unmarried ought not to have holes in their ears. I know we do it. It's custom, and it's decorative, and people, you know, they want to stick earrings in those holes. But married women are bondservants to their husbands because they've been bought and paid for. But, of course, you men don't buy and pay for your wives anymore because you don't practice dowries and bride price. You go lay this girl in the back of your van, and you get her free, and she's worth just exactly what you pay. Nothing. And that's why, ladies, your husbands value you according to what they paid for you. Now, a guy by the name of Jacob worked 7 years for a woman. And I would submit to you, boys and girls, that your husband values his cows, his bulls, his horses higher than he values you, his wife, because he paid more for the bulls, the cows, and the horses than he paid for you. Jacob paid 7 years' labor. Let's just think about this for a moment. If this guy worked 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, you know, just 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, he worked 2,000 hours a year. 2,000 hours times 7 is 14,000 hours times 5.25, which is minimum wage. He paid $73,500 for the first woman, $73,500 for the second woman, and that's at minimum wage, boys and girls. Now, he was an indentured bondservant, so he got board and room. Board and room was equal to the 73.5. So he got paid 73.5 times 2, and he paid $147,000 in today's dollars for each one of those women. Now, if you paid a bride price of $147,000 for your wife, boys, let me guarantee you, you take a hell of a lot better care of her. You treat that woman just like Proverbs 31 tells you to. Because a woman a wife is as valuable as rubies, which, by the way, rubies are rarer than diamonds. I don't know where we got the idea that diamonds are a girl's best friend. I guess that was from De Beers marketing. If you take a look at gemstones, the rarest gemstone there is a ruby. They should therefore be the most expensive. They're not. Diamonds are, but then that's because the ruby monopoly hasn't, there isn't a ruby monopoly, but there is a diamond monopoly. So I just thought I'd share a little bit of that concept with you because it's a part of our economy. And after all, we deal in an economy. We don't deal with property now. We deal with an economy. And we pay taxes. And if you're just the average Joe Sixpack, you're not only paying the taxes, the 257 taxes on the Big Mac, you're also paying one-third of everything you create and produce in income and Social Security taxes. And that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme which is going upside down. So you young workers are not going to collect what you're paying into Social Security. I mean, you may collect it in absolute dollars, but you're not going to collect it in purchasing power. So I looked at that some years back, and I said, well, I think I'll opt out of Social Security, which I did back in 1984, I believe it was. I quit paying into it in 78, but I opted out in 84. And the difference in what I paid in was $140,000. I paid in $12,000 up to 78. I would have paid in $153,000, I believe, by 2002. And then I said to myself, I think I need to opt out of the Social Security thing because it's a bad investment. So I took a $12,000 hit, but I saved $140,000 in the process. And then in $140,000, I'm well pleased with what I did with my $140,000. Very satisfied. I'm not on Social Security. I took my money and I invested it in something else. I did something else with my money. Now, I'm not telling people that you should not invest in Social Security. If you want to do that, get after it. But if you do the arithmetic, I think that it'll show you that it's a bad investment. In fact, a better investment would be airplane gas. Yeah, I'd rather spend my Social Security money on airplane gas. It's true, I'm going to burn it up, but at least I'll have some fun by burning the airplane gas. I don't want to pay into Social Security and get nothing. I'd rather take my Social Security money and go to a whorehouse, for crying out loud, than I would to spend it on Social Security. At least I'd have some fun. In 1992, Federal Reserve study showed that 43% of U.S. families spent more than they earned. That was back in 1992. American families, starting in 1992, began spending more than they earned. And today, you're spending more than you earn, but you're spending more of the more than you earn today. That's why you need credit cards. You people couldn't make ends meet without credit cards. But boys and girls, that comes to a finite end because your debt is growing exponentially. It's growing 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. It's growing geometrically. At some point in time, it's going to come back and wallop you right between the eyes. So the brighter solution, the more intelligent, more logical solution to my mind is, well, wait a minute. If this ship ultimately is going to sink, we might as well stay off this ship and take another boat. If the Titanic isn't going to make it to New York, then there's no point in booking passage. And boys and girls, Social Security ain't going to make it to New York. Neither is Medicare. So I'm not on Medicare. They had a deadline. In fact, as I speak today, Monday, the 15th of May, is the deadline for signing up for Medicare. I'm going to hibernate in my house. I'm going to stay as far away from Medicare sign-up polling places as I can get. That's the last thing in the world I need is a guardian ward relationship with a master. I don't need any more masters. There's plenty of them out there. According to the National Association of Realtors, the average homeowner stays in their home for 7 years. With an 8% mortgage, they will sell their home, still owing 90% on their mortgage. If they were to continue this trend, they would never pay off a mortgage in their lifetime. So if you're the average Joe Sixpack, you're never going to pay your mortgage off. Well, let me tell you that what I own ain't much, but what I own is free and clear. And I don't have any mortgage, and I live in a house. And I think that every American should live in a house that he owns free and clear. And in 1900, Americans lived in their homes that they owned free and clear. In fact, you couldn't get a mortgage in 1927 in excess of 7 years because we practiced the land Sabbath practice as it relates to debt up until 1933 in this country. I'm talking about the United States of America. You couldn't get a mortgage over 7 years because we practiced the land Sabbath principle as it related to credit until 1933. Franklin Roosevelt said, what we need are mortgages that run 10 years. Franklin Roosevelt said, God's program is no good. Follow mine. And the people of America said, well, it sounds like a good plan to me. And they got on it. I was reading some statistics the other day. You can get a mortgage today, interest only. They call them adjustable rate mortgages. They're called ARMs, A-R-M-S, ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages, where you never pay the principal on your house. All you pay is the interest. Isn't that just special? Well, it makes all the sense in the world to communists that practice the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. It doesn't fit with the commandment that says, thou shalt not steal. but it certainly does fit with the first plank of the Communist Manifesto. Only 2% of homes in America are paid for. Mine's paid for. And I'm one of that 2%. I think everybody in America should be in that 2%, which would make 100% of Americans that own their homes frankly. And in no case should anybody have a debt longer than 7 years, and in no case should anybody have a debt that isn't forgiven at the end of 7 years or paid in full. In fact, that's what the usury statute and credit statutes call for in the Bible. If you would practice the usury statutes and the credit statutes of the scripture, you wouldn't be in debt, and you wouldn't need to worry about this UCC straw man argument, because it would be totally moot. I don't need it. What would I use it for? What would I use the straw man argument for? What would I do with it? Don't have any debt. Don't pay any taxes. Well, that's another thing. I say I don't pay any taxes. I don't pay income tax and Social Security taxes. That's because I avoid income like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. I mean, income is commerce. Commerce is called Canaanite trafficking in the Bible, strictly prohibited. Franklin Roosevelt came along in the 1930s and said, what you people want is commerce. In fact, every city has what we call a chamber of commerce. We wallow in commerce. We love commerce. Commerce is what we all cut our eye teeth on in business. What we want is trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting a public interest. We want business licenses, permits, professional licenses. We want to go to college and get letters after our names so that we can join the economy. We can join commerce and pay income tax and Social Security, which takes one-third of everything we create and produce coming out of the chute. We have 14 taxes that we're paying, boys and girls, that consume 75% of everything we create and produce. You got that? If you're the average Joe Sixpack and you went to college, you got a degree, and you're out here working for corporate America, you're paying 74%. I said 75, it's actually 74%. 74%. God, no wonder you need credit cards. How in the hell can you live on 25% of what you make? 14 taxes. Income tax and Social Security are the two biggest ones. And then you've got gasoline taxes, property taxes, and excise taxes, fines. I mean, there's 14 of them. I don't have the list right in front of me there, but, you know, right off the top of my head, I mean, five or six. And you got capital gain tax. That's another one over there, capital gain tax. Somebody says, well, I don't have any capital, so I don't have any capital gains. How in the hell could you have capital and capital gains when you're paying 74% of everything you create and produce in taxes? I mean, hell, when you walk in and you buy a Big Mac, in this state, you got to pay a 7% sales tax. I mean, the government comes in, charges you 33% on your income, then they charge you 7% to spend what you got left. You call that intelligent? If I came here from Mars and I took a look at this economy and I took a look at your tax system, I would say there is no intelligent life on this planet. You people have rejected the Ten Commandments and adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Your government takes a third of everything you create and produce in income and Social Security taxes and then charges 7% to spend what's left. And you call that intelligent? Let me pause right there and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, thinking about taxes, there's a 16.1% Social Security tax. That's for you wage earners, of which somebody is sure to write me an email and say, you fool, you blind, you nitwit, don't you know that our employers pay half of that Social Security tax for us? Let me respond before you send me the email, partner. You fool, you blind, you nitwit. Don't you know that your employer doesn't pay any Social Security tax for you, that you pay it all? And that $25 an hour shop rate that he charges, he pays you $10 an hour, he pays himself $10 an hour, and he takes $5 an hour to pay those taxes. And who's paying the taxes? The guy that comes into your shop and buys the services. Your employer doesn't pay a nickel's worth of tax. I'm an employer. I'm an old-timey businessman. I never paid a nickel's worth of tax. Never. Not a nickel. You people pay it all. Well, that's the way the system works. You know, I'm just reporting to you. That's the way that game's played. So you might as well wake up to reality. And as long as you want to play communism over here, you're going to pay lots of taxes. Now, God has a tax. I don't want you to think now that the Ten Commandments and the law of God doesn't have a tax. But the tax is 10%. That's my point. It's not 74%. It's 10%. And it's 10% of the net. Not gross. 10% of the net. And everybody pays that tax, rich and poor. The rich man who makes $1 million a year pays 10%. And the poor man that makes $10,000 a year pays 10%. Everybody pays 10%. That's what we call equality. Everybody pays the same. And the poor man over there that aspires to become a millionaire has all the opportunity in the world. Just get out there and go to work, partner. And when you make $1 million, you'll pay $100,000 in tax, just like the rich man does. Now, only 2% of American homes are paid for. That's a tragedy. On average, Americans can expect to receive just 37% of the annual retirement income that they're going to need to live comfortably. And that's called America's Retirement Crisis, the Search for Solutions, published by the Oppenheimer Funds. Listen, 37%, that's all that you have or can expect to have, one-third of what you're going to need to retire comfortably. I don't know what comfortable is. So when I saw those numbers, I said, well, there's no point in George Gordon retiring. There's no retirement program spoken of in the Bible. Abraham never retired. Moses died on a work day. Did you know that? Moses was on the job the day he died. He was 120 years old, and he was working for God for the last 40 years. From 80 to 120, he worked every day, except Saturday, for 40 years, and died on the job without any retirement, no Social Security. And I said, hell, if it's good enough for Moses, it's good enough for me. So I didn't retire. Well, there wasn't any point in retiring, because if I did, I'd only have 37% of what I'm going to need to retire comfortably anyway, so I might as well keep right on working so I can make 100% of what I need to live comfortably. And as of 1995, 92% of U.S. family disposable income was spent on paying debts. That was up from 65% in 1975. And let's get these numbers down, boys and girls. As of 1995, about 10 years ago, U.S. families' disposable income, 92%, was paying debts. Jesus, did you get that? You know, for practical purposes, you people are all bankrupt. 92%, you might as well round it off to 100. 100% of everything you make is applied to debt. What the hell's left for you? And all of that debt requires that you service the debt by paying interest, doesn't it? I don't know, kids. It sounds like to me that debt is your Achilles heel. No wonder you need the UCC argument and straw men and some kind of a silver bullet over here to solve your problem. But I already showed you UCC doesn't work, so you can forget that. There is a solution to your problem. We're coming to that, and I'll tell you what the solution is. You're not going to like it, but then, you know. I tested it, and it works like a shot. Like I said, I'm one of the 2% that owns my home. I don't have any debt. I'm not paying anything on my debts. I don't have any. Zero. And furthermore, I don't think anybody in America ought to have a debt. And I'll tell you something else. I was told when I was a kid to avoid debt like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I didn't listen, of course. I went out and created a lot of debts and got a bunch of credit cards. I'll tell you who I listened to. I listened to my teachers in high school. I listened to those liberal nitwits in the high schools that had letters after their names. I didn't listen to Frank Rocha, the immigrant that had $1 million and 140 cows bought and paid for. I didn't listen to the successful businessmen. I listened to the damn teachers in the high schools who didn't have a pot to piss in, a place to put it, or a window to throw it out at. Those are the guys I listened to. The guys that had a pot and had a place to put it and had a window to throw it out of, I didn't pay attention to those guys. But then, you know, when you're young, you know it all. So I'm old now, and I don't know anything, so you people ought not to listen to me, but I just thought I'd share with you that I'm not making any mortgage payments. I haven't made any mortgage payments for a long time. I got off that mortgage crap back in when did I quit making mortgage payments? Back in the 1970s, 78. Yeah, when I learned how to count, I couldn't count until I was 37. I went to public school. I couldn't count until I was 37. But boy, once I learned how to count and do my numbers, well, I've never been the same since. You won't be either. Once you learn how to count, boys and girls, you'll never be the same. Now, in 1975, Americans were spending 65% of what they earned, of their income, disposable income, on debt. By 1995, it was up to 92%. It's higher than that now, but I don't have any more recent numbers than 1995. For the year ending June 30th, 1996, personal bankruptcies totaled more than 1 million for the first time ever in a 12-month period. That's almost one bankruptcy for every 100 U.S. households, about 1% going bankrupt. That's a tragedy. You shouldn't be going bankrupt. You should be lending, not borrowing. Remember, God's promise was, you know, follow my law and you'll be a lender, not a borrower. I practice the Ten Commandments. I used to be a communist. I mean, I was a full-fledged practicing communist. I never belonged to the Communist Party. I practiced communism. Hell, I wasn't a theorist. I wasn't some kind of a political activist. Hell, I was a practicing communist. I practiced all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And it never worked for me. I was always flat-ass broke. I couldn't make my payments. I was in debt up over my eyeballs, making payments to everybody. I was a credit, debt, wage, slave, bond servant. And one day I woke up, learned how to count, got over public school, and all of a sudden, I said, well, I'll quit practicing communism. I think I'll go back and practice the Ten Commandments. I started practicing the Ten Commandments, and I started making money. And then as time wore on, I made more and more money, and finally I got rid of all my debts and got rid of all my mortgages, and now I'm sitting here. Of course, I'm not retired. I'm still working, 67 years old, and still working. When I'm 77, I'll still be working. When I'm 97, I'll still be working. I'm not going to retire. So for you people that want to retire, this probably isn't the program for you. But for those of you that want economic success, you want to make money, well, let me suggest the Ten Commandments. Communism didn't work for Russia. Communism didn't work for China. Communism hasn't worked for any other country that's ever tried it in history. What in hell makes you think it's going to work for Canada? What makes you Australians think that communism is going to work in Australia? What makes you Americans think that communism is going to work in America when it didn't work in Russia? Hell, the Chinese and the Russians gave up communism and went to a free market economy. Now look at their economies grow and look at America stagnate. Yeah. But one of these days, when you people all go broke, you know, you will revert back to the law of the jungle, which is competitive free enterprise. It works that way. They call it in government the underground economy. Underground economy. It represents about one half of all of the goods and services traded in America are traded in the underground economy. If your economy is running at $11 trillion a year, you can just about bet that $5 trillion a year is being dealt with in the underground economy. The real American economy is probably more like $15 or $16 trillion a year, but half of it's off the books, which in reality is what keeps the American economy going. If we didn't have that underground economy, we'd have already gone upside down long ago. The average household has four credit cards and balances of $4,800. That's up, by the way. It's up from two cards and $2,340 in balances 5 years ago. Now, that was in 1996. Americans have gone to credit because they can't make ends meet. America's government has gone to credit because they can't make ends meet. And the credit is unsustainable. Credit's unsustainable over the long haul. You can do it for a while, and you've been doing it, and you're going to continue to do it for a while longer, but it's coming to an end. Now, when it comes to an end, there's going to be a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth like there was in the 1930s, a lot of weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth. My recommendation is get ready for it before it happens. Be prepared for it, and then when it happens, and it's going to make you sad, but it won't make you weep and wail. You'll be sad. I'm going to be sad. Everybody's going to be sad. But I don't think I'll be weeping and wailing. For the year ending June 30th, 1996, personal bankruptcies totaled more than a million. Remember that? On average, you're going to spend 112% more on credit card purchases than when you use cash. Do you get that? Write it down. 112%. You're going to spend double. Now, remember I said if you got a credit card with $5,800 on it, you're going to spend $15,000. That's nearly three times as much. You're going to spend at least double. The official number is 112%. That's why I said, you know, if you want to double your standard of living, get rid of the credit card. That's all. You can double your standard of living. I don't have any credit cards. None. Zero zilch. I couldn't handle it. Now, there are people out there that can handle credit cards. George Gordon's not one of them. I can handle my whiskey, though. I can handle the booze. I can handle the cigarettes. But I can't handle credit cards. I guess I'm a credit cardaholic. Some people can't handle booze, some people can't handle cigarettes, some people can't handle credit. Well, I'm one of those that can't handle credit. So I swore off the credit thing over there, and I got strictly on a cash basis. I deal only in gold and silver coin. Gold and silver. Making the minimum payment on a $4,800 balance, that's the average balance of the U.S. cardholder today, at the average annual 17% annual rate. Now, this statistic now is a little elderly. I couldn't get any numbers for 2006, 2005, and 4, so we're dealing with numbers that go back 10 years. You think that it's less today than it was 10 years ago? Not from what I read in the everyday press. Credit cards are more prolific today. Interest rates are higher. In fact, interest rates go up 27% on these credit cards. 27%. If you tie in the fees that go along with it, oh hell, it can be up to 40 or 50%. There's a number of fees and penalties and things that go along with it. If you added that onto the interest rate that you're paying, it can go up as high as 50%. And you people want to use credit cards? Huh? Intelligent life on planet Earth? Well, making the minimum payment on a $4,800 balance, that 17% interest, will take you 39 years and 7 months to pay off. And you'll pay $10,818 in interest alone and a total of $15,000 for the privilege of charging the $4,800. $15,619 for charging $4,800. Take you 39 years to pay it off. 5, 10, 15, now that's 3 times over a period of 39 years. Boys and girls, that's geometric progression. Can you see that? There's no money in geometric progression if you're the guy that's paying it. If you're the guy that's collecting it, it makes good money. Nearly half of all Americans, 46%, have less than $10,000 saved for their retirement. 39% of Americans are anxious about their ability to achieve their desired retirement lifestyle. That's a 1997 number. And an $8,000 debt at an 18% interest rate will take you 25 years to repay and cost $24,000, 3 times as much. So if you want to know what the numbers are, here's what it is. An $8,000 debt, 18% interest, 25 years, $24,000, 3 times as much. Good for the credit card companies, good for the economy, good for business, and bad for you. Now, those are the numbers that are driving you people to the Uniform Commercial Code argument and the straw men and all of these failure-type tax protest movement programs that take you nowhere and land you in jail and make you no money. I'm not here to tell you not to do it. I'm just here to tell you those are the numbers. As they say down at the Blue Room, read them and weep. Now we come up to the story of usury. I'm going to tell you what the Bible says about usury, and then I'm going to tell you what the state tells you about usury. In Deuteronomy 24, verse 6, no man shall take the neither or the upper millstone to pledge, for he taketh a man's life to pledge. Those are called the tools of your trade. If you were a miller, you cannot collateralize your debt. Now, what's the first thing the banker wants? He wants collateral. It's against the law to collateralize a debt. Now, somebody's going to say, well, my God, how would I get paid what somebody owes me? What in the hell are you lending on usury and collateral for? What's the purpose behind it? Because it grows geometrically. God prohibited it because God could count. I don't know how old God was before he could count, but I was 37. And before I was born, God could count, as evidenced by these laws, and he said, don't do that. Now, if God's got a fault, and I'm sure that there must be something there, if he was sitting down with you over coffee, he'd say, well, I made a mistake, you know, with the Garden of Eden, or I did this or that, or something else didn't work out the way I thought it was going to work out. If I could find a fault with God, I would say, God did not explain why. Human beings have to know why. My dad used to say, it's 8 o'clock, it's bedtime, go to bed. But he never told me why 5-year-old kids have to go to bed at 8 o'clock. Always ticked me off. And God never tells us why. He just says, don't do it. But he doesn't tell you why you shouldn't do it. Doesn't explain to you what the outcome is going to be. And so, you know, being curious people, you know, we have to say, well, you know, thou shalt not steal. Seems like to me that theft is a lot of fun, and it's a lot cheaper to steal it than it is to buy it, so therefore I think I'll just steal it. So people go into Walmart, and they shoplift, and they steal. And that's okay. Walmart isn't paying that. You and I are. They just raise the prices to cover the amount that's stolen. They have an inventory shrinkage. All businesses do. They have an inventory shrinkage, and so you just take the inventory shrinkage, it's 5%, and add 5% to your prices. So simple that is. Don't ever believe for a moment that Walmart's paying for any shoplifting going on in their stores. Walmart's not really too concerned about shoplifting going on in their stores. I was never concerned about shoplifting. I just took a look at, well, how much is being shoplifted? And the answer in my store is 5%. I raised the prices 5%. And I raised the prices 10%, so I'd make an extra 5%. I always figured if the shoplifter could make 5%, I ought to make 5%. If my employee's making $10 an hour, I ought to make $10 an hour. Well, here's the statute, Deuteronomy 24, 10 through 13. When you lend to your brother anything, you shall not go into his house to fetch his pledge. You got that? It's against the law to go into his house to fetch the pledge. You shall stand abroad, and the man to whom you do lend shall bring out the pledge abroad to you. That's collateral again. You shall not lend upon usury, Deuteronomy 23, 19 and 20. You shall not lend upon usury to your brother. Usury of money, usury of victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury. You cannot take a percentage of whatever it is that you're lending. So when I lend you $100, I can't take 6%. I can't take 1%. I can't take 0.1%. Not 0.01%. You understand that? It's because it's geometric. And ultimately, at some point in time, I will own it all. So God says, you know, Gordon, you learned how to count, but most of those people out there went to public school. They can't count, and it's against the law for you to take advantage of. Jews haven't learned that yet, so they're still charging usury and interest and enslaving all you people. And that was one of Martin Luther's biggest complaints. In fact, in the series that I did on what world-famous men say about the Jews, you know what the number one complaint about Judaism and Jews is? Usury. Martin Luther said that their usury impoverishes the Christians. Excuse me, Christians, but it takes two to tango. Did you know that? It takes two. And for every whore, there has to be a man. Did you know that? Did you know that without any men, there could be no whores? Think about that. Now, if you Christians would practice the Ten Commandments, then you would be lenders, not borrowers. And you wouldn't be paying interest and usury if you obeyed God and kept His commandments. So don't get mad at the Jew because he comes over and he's smart enough to say, hey, look, Christian, if you want to borrow, pay me. Otherwise, get out there and go to work and save your money like I did. So I'm not complaining about the Jews. I'm not complaining about the Federal Reserve. I'm not complaining about the income tax and Social Security. I'm not complaining about the mafia. And I'm not complaining about the mafia and their lending practices. I don't do business with any of the above. And if you don't do business with the bank, you won't have any room to complain. If you don't do business with the mafia, then you don't need to be concerned about loan sharking. I don't borrow money from the loan sharks, and I don't pay interest and usury, and I don't collateralize my debts. And why is that? Well, it's because there's about one, two, three, four, five statutes here. God gave you five statutes on usury. He said, don't do that. He didn't tell you why, didn't explain geometric progression, and didn't give you the story of the little boy and the horseshoes. I guess he figured that you'd figure that out over time. But he said, don't do it. When you learn how to don't do it, then you can learn how to make money. I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right there. I'm going to have to leave it right here and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I'll leave it right there. See you back tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, until then. Thanks for listening, and good night, friends.